Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. I'm the beverage director of the Epicurean Group of Restaurants. And today on the show, we have an exciting show. We have a friend of mine. But before we get started with Francesco from Canalico di Sopra Winery, I did want to introduce a relatively new segment for this show. We're going to be talking about my favorite wine that I had last week. And this week it was the Chaminade Morgon 1998 that I picked up from Appalachian Wines. It is obviously Morgon is one of the crews of Beaujolais, and Chaminade is not a producer I was very familiar with before, but I was over there for an event and got to talking, and I found out they had this really great old bottles of the Morgon, and I picked one up. So really beautiful. You guys have to check this out. Morgon is notoriously one of the crews of Beaujolais that ages extremely well. And this one was not an exception to that rule, except usually it didn't have the power that you normally associate with Morgon. A really elegant light wine. I had it at Lartuzzi with our brand new quail with radicchio, and it was absolutely delicious. Anyway, last I heard, they have 6 or 7 bottles left, and it's completely worth it. And so check out some Chaminade 98 Morgon. Now, welcome to the show, Francesco from Canalico di Sopra. It is great to have you. I've known you, someone I've known for years. Actually, yeah. My first visit to Montalcino was...
It was almost 2008, something like that.
It was 2008, that's right. Yeah. And we went to visit your estate. I went with Jeff Toscarella from The Nomad and Vince Attar from Vinifera, just the three of us. Vince was doing some crazy driving and followed the GPS the wrong way, even though I knew my spidey senses said that the Montalcino was in the opposite direction, and Vince insisted to go somewhere towards the coast. And I was like, it's the wrong way. So we get there. And your sister had cooked us this incredible lunch. I was completely carsick at the moment, and I had no appetite, but had a bite of her soup, and all was okay. And
yeah, I really remember with great pleasure the first meeting. Since then, we had a very good relationship, friendship, and I'm happy to be here on this radio show to speak with you about my winery, about Brunello di Montalcino, and the great terroir where I came from.
So at that time in 2008, it was kind of relatively recent that you had taken over the winery. Is that true?
Yeah, we can say I was born in the winery because my grandfather started the estate in 1962. My father entered in the estate with my grandfather in 1987. Is the year when I was born, and since I was born, I grew up in in the cellar for the together with the passion of my grandfather and my father making wine. So, but officially, just like work, like job, I started in 2007, and we can say I start with a great connection with the U.S. market, because I started to enter in the state with my first trip in the United States in 2007 alone.
Okay, and you came in 2011. And when you started in 2007, what was your position at that time?
Yeah, my position was a position that there was a lackness in the state. Because since when my grandfather had a big ill, he has been in a wheelchair for 15 years, and he just passed away 4 months ago. He was the face of the state. So since 1999, when he has been in a wheelchair, there was no more face of the state, and the state was passing a moment of some problems in terms of marketing. because they're, you know, that in the world of wine, it's very important to make great wines and to sell great wines. So I think I take the only one position left in the state, because my brother, which is managing the estate together with me, is doing a great job in the vineyard. So he's the main actor for the quality of the wine. But I took to manage better the cellar and to go around to sell the wine. So winemaking and marketing and sales of our estate is my position since 2007 in the state.
Since you were 20 years old.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. And today you're one of three vice presidents of the consortio.
Yeah, that's a great, position that I'm very honored to that, because there is a very strong relationship with the Consorzio del Vino Brunello di Montalcino in my family, because my grandfather was one of the founders in 1967 of the Consorzio, and he has been in the years vice president and president for the Rosso di Montalcino. So it's a very big honor for me to have this great consideration from the Brunello producer and be in the board of director, just to take care about the promotion and the communication, which is my position in the consortium now.
Now, obviously, your family has a long history there, but when, as a relatively young guy, you came on, were you immediately welcomed by the other producers, or was it kind of thing where, what does this kid know? He's so young.
No, it's, I really immediately welcomed from the other producer, because for sure the family is Montalcino's family, has been, for 10 generations in Montalcino, and I just started to make wine from 3 generations ago, but has always had a great reputation in the city, like to be a serious family, very respectful, and also because we can say my grandfather was really a great character in the city. Everybody used to know him, so and was very friendly, with a lot of friendship. And this is also one of the motives, because when Dominic Nocerino from Vinifera Imports came to Montalcino in 1979 to select his first Brunello producer, he decided to work with this small guy that was my grandfather. That was not a famous name at that moment. Canalicchio di Sopra was not a famous estate in 1979, but Dominic really liked the character of my grandfather, so he was very, very famous in the area of Montalcino.
It's really amazing, that kind of vision that Dominic Nocerino had in the 1970s to bring in producers like you and Bruno Giacosa and Angelo Gaia and all of these guys, Hofstadter, producers who, you know, now have become so respected and so famous. What was that first? Did your grandfather ever talk about what that meeting, the first meetings were like with Dominic Nocerino? And this guy, he started Vinifera Imports and then tried to convince America to, or at least New York at first, to buy nice, high-end, really high-quality Italian wines, when that's not what people were thinking about in the late 70s and early 80s when it came to Italian wine.
I think there are just a few people that made in the years this great job for Italian wines, and Dominic Nocerino is for sure one of that, thanks to his we can say sixth sense to choose very great producer that they worked always in a serious way, just thinking about the quality, and that's one of the main characteristics to be present here in this market. So I think this is a great market where you can make also great business in terms of money too, but if you don't have the seriousness, this market, it's discover you that you're not a serious producer, so you have to pay attention, you have to always work in terms of quality, because here for sure there is a big concurrence between all the producers that want to be here. And we are proud and we are very happy to be with Vinifera, but Vinifera, it cannot be a great importer without people like you, Joe, that you really appreciate our job. You really look for wines that speak about authenticity, speak about terroir. They don't speak only about the brand marketing, but also there is something real inside a wine. So it's a mix, and I think that Vinifera gave the opportunity to have this wine here available, but without your great job and people like you and the new people, like young people They have very great position in the sommelier now, in the restaurant now. That's something that I felt, even if I'm very young, the big change went from 2007, the first time I came here. I have now a great relationship with many people that are almost the age of me, and it's really nice how these new people, they are not just following brand, big marketing operation, but they really like to discover something of some gems, something of new and unusual.
Oh, well, I think you give me way too much credit. I just have to taste wine and like it, and then pop open bottles and share it with our guests. So you give me way too. You guys do all the hard work. Our job is much, much easier in comparison. So thank you very much for that. But I don't think it's well deserved. Have you changed anything from the way that you said you're very involved in the winemaking in the cellar? Have things changed from the earlier years of the way your grandfather has done things, or have you tried to keep things the same?
No, I mean, Canalicchio di Sopra is considered to be a very classic producer in Montalcino, but not too traditionalist. I don't like the degenerative meaning of the words, no? So traditional means to make the same things that we used to make 50 years ago. And I think that my grandfather would not be happy, wouldn't be happy to hear that I'm doing what he was doing 50 years ago, in the sense that something is changing for sure, but it's changing to make better wines, mm-hmm. not to change the wine. I like to say that in the last 15 years, Canalicchio di Sopra wine has more cleanness, which means for me that if we always made terroir wines that speak about terroir, I think that we are more traditional now than 15, 20 years ago, because we have been able to put away some defects of the traditional, or the very traditional, or the not big knowledge about producing wine we used to have 20, 25 years ago. And now with more knowledge, we are putting in our bottle more terroir, more purity of fruit. So the cleanness, it's a very important component. At the research of cleanness and the purity of fruit is something that we really look every time. And for sure, this also can means to have to change something, but not making a wine that speak about cellar operation, just making a wine with more than in the past speak about a terroir.
Now, speaking of the terroir of Brunello di Montalcino, there is some discussion of separating the separate terroirs of Brunello di Montalcino into classified crus, almost like in the Burgundy system. What do you think of this idea? And if so, if you're for it, where would Canalicchio di Sopra fit? Would there be cru Canalicchio di Sopra wines?
Yeah, Canalicchio di Sopra is located in the northeast side of Montalcino Hill, which is for sure a historical side of production of the Montalcino, of Brunello di Montalcino, is where we can say the Brunello di Montalcino was born. And we are managing vineyards in Canalicchio di Sopra, and so in the crew of Canalicchio, we can say the small portion where there are also other producers, but being the historical producer of this crew, we have the name of the crew in our brand, and we have also 6 hectares of Brunello di Montalcino in the Montoso Hill, so two of the most important names for Montalcino in the north side. But Montalcino, for sure, that's my idea. We can speak about the beautiful of Montalcino is that is a big place in terms of square kilometers of the municipality where you can grow Brunello di Montalcino, and you have very different expression of Sangiovese due to the climate, to the weather, to the soil. But it's not that there is just one type of soil in north, one type of soil in south, or one type of soil in west and east, where you can make a very precise classification of this crew. It's really mixed of soil between the different zone of production, between the different versant, different side of the hill. So it's really hard to think about a classification like it can be made in Burgundy, and to arrive to say that there is a classification also in terms of quality, in Montalcino. So we can say that the job of the consortium that made in 50 years has been to make a classification of only the best 2,000 hectares we have in Montalcino to plant Brunello. So this is already made a classification, because the other option could be to plant 6,000 hectares of Brunello and then making a classification of the best 2,000. We prefer to not make that, just to plant in the best place of Montalcino. So we can speak, and we are really speaking in Montalcino, to think about to give a different micro zone from the four different version of the hill, which they give for sure different expression because of the weather, but not to make really a division in 25-30 crew.
Mm-hmm. And because you think it would be too challenging for the consumers, or what is the reason not to do the
business? Yeah, because one of can be that, but it's also because there is not really a reason just to make a classification that can take to have a different, how can I say, different appreciation, different quality, and then different value, no, of Brunello di Montalcino also for the estate, because yeah, we already made that just choosing in different zone the best place. So I think it's not easy, because you can have some characteristics that you have in the north, you can have, for example, in the west, you can have, because the soil is very mixing, and the same, there are some years where, for example, the warm season, maybe to make a very classic Brunello di Montalcino, which is in the mind of the people of Brunello di Montalcino, which can age, we are a bit more lucky in the north side, because we are able to maintain a higher acidity. But some years where the south, it takes more advantage. So I think it can be good to speak about four different climate and the people, mm-hmm, they can for what they prefer, because it's really difficult to say what's the best place of Montalcino. I think there is not a best place. It's what you prefer. Montalcino already made a selection to only make grapes and wine from the best place.
Yeah, then, well, I have to say that I am a big fan of Montalcino, but I do prefer I love your wines. Obviously, we have them at all of our restaurants. We have them at Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, and Lepicio. And I love, and you alluded to this before, how well they age. I think the youngest wine we have from you in Brunello di Montalcino is maybe 2001 right now.
Yeah.
Also, one of the really nice things about working with Vinifera is that they don't feel the economic pressure, it seems, to sell all of the current wine right away, the way maybe some other distributors do when they get to the end of the vintage and they close out the wine or they try to push it along. At Vinifera, we can get like six different vintages of Canalicchio di Sopra Brunello di Montalcino, which I love being able to do that. Going back to, I think, 95 right now.
Yeah, 94. They have available 94 in portfolio, including Reserva, 16 different vintage of Canalicchio di Sopra. That's an amazing vision from the owner, from Dominic Nocerino, that he really understand the value of this wine in terms of capacity for aging, and sometimes to make brandy for an estate, it's very important to show the capacity of aging, and this is really a good opportunity for me, which I came very often here 3-4 times per year in the United States to organize a lot of wine dinners. The people always hear about Brunello has a great potential for aging, but how many people have the chance to taste? Because there is always this we run to sell the current vintage, and we don't understand that the real value is to show. And especially I think it's a great service for restaurant, because not many restaurants has a space, especially in the city, mm-hmm, to buy, and also budget to buy a lot of cases of a vintage and then keep for 10-15 years. Some change. And Vinifera has a very smart philosophy in the sales, without charging a crazy price, but let the people try the history of an estate. And for me, it's a great opportunity, because I like to make wine dinner to to stay with people to present my wines. And this year in the United States, we meet something like 500 people in different wine dinners around the country drinking our old vintage. Every time is almost 10, 12 vintage of Canalicchio di Sopra. So that's a great opportunity for branding my estate.
All right. We're going to be back with more with Francesco from Canalicchio di Sopra on In the Drink just after this quick break. Thank you so much.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels to lower barrel entry proof before heat cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's: phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com. Or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
We're back with Francesco Di Pacioli of Canalicchio di Sopra Winery from Brunello di Montalcino. Francesco, I would love for you to start off this next segment telling us some very, very geeky fact about Brunello di Montalcino that maybe our listeners don't know, some obscure fact that maybe if you're really, 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 really into wine, and especially wine from Montalcino, this would be an interesting thing for you, but it's not easy to find looking up in a book.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not easy to answer. Montalcino, yeah, it's, all the place in Italy, it's sometimes a place where we are not very able to stay together. And the good is that from the new generation, something is changing very well. And now there is really a very good team that we work all together to go around and to bring the brand of Brunello di Montalcino. But in this moment, it's very... hard to think about some obscure fact happening in Montalcino. Maybe everybody knows what happened a few years ago, but everything now is solved. And I think from that period is really started a new era for Montalcino. It's a very positive way, in a very, very friendship way between producers. And that's thanks to the new generation that are coming out and... they are really doing a very good job together. Because don't forget, Montalcino is not a single brand of a producer, of a brand, but Montalcino is really a brand that we have to share. So more people they know the Brunello di Montalcino than the single brand, even if there are producers that have been in the market for many years, now they have his famous brand. But without Brunello di Montalcino, I don't think it could be the same.
Well, let's talk about the growth of Brunello di Montalcino then. In the late 1970s, for instance, in 79, how many producers were there in Montalcino? Maybe you don't know exactly in 1979, but in the late 1970s, approximately.
I know the growing of the numbers. The explosion was in the 90s, like everybody knows. And the 1979, we can speak about 50 producers. In the 1967, when the consortium was founded by 14 producers. My family was one of them. And there was around 6-7 producers out from the consortium. And one for sure, the first producer, 1885, the first bottle made was the Biondi Santis family, who we can say invented the Brunello di Montalcino, so made the first bottle of Brunello di Montalcino, labeled like Brunello di Montalcino. The big explosion was in the 90s, and we arrived at the beginning of 2000 to have 230 producers. That's also because of the wine becomes very, very famous, and especially here in the United States. the vintage 1990, which was released in 1995, was the consecration for the Brunello di Montalcino, like a great wine, like a wine for collector, which is the segment, which is the market where we are looking for, and for high quality restaurants. So we can say the big growing in terms of numbers of producer has been between the 90s and the 2000s.
Okay, so 1885, one producer, 1961, 14 producers.
In the consortium, 20 in total, something like that.
20 producers in total. Late 1970s, 50 producers. Late 1990s, 230.
Yeah.
That's a huge growth. And is it possible for the numbers to continue to grow? Is the zone, are you guys talking about increasing the zone of Montalcino,
you know what,
at all? Or is it, it seems like most of the area planted that could be planted is planted at this
point.
Yeah,
the point is that from the to 230 producer, it's a numbers, but it's not strong linked to the growing of the vineyards, because we had a very big attention to plant all in the best place in Montalcino. So to maintain, we arrived to have 2,000 hectares in 1999, and we decided to stop to plant vineyards because almost all the best places were already planted with Brunello di Montalcino. So you can plant other vines to make IGT, to make Sant'Antimo, which is our third denomination, but not to make more Brunello di Montalcino. So maybe producer can grow in terms of numbers or in terms of producer, but not with the same amount of vineyards. So it can happen that some producer maybe sell and they divide, say, between three new producers, even if the value today in Montalcino is very, really high value. So we are more subjected to external investors than to autochthonal producer to be like a new producer in Montalcino. But I think that some of the, I mean, very historical producer, like around 50 producer, we never sell vines and we never sell vineyards, because that's our light, that's our passion.
I have to ask you, because Montalcino has been in the news in the past few years, at least in the wine news. I don't know how many of our guests at least talk about this or know about this, but there was obviously the scandal with some people adulterating, or the supposed adulterating of Montalcino, Brunello di Montalcino. Guys, the Brunello di Montalcino has to be 100% Sangiovese Grosso. From my understanding, there are different clones of Sangiovese Grosso, yep, but none of them include Cabernet Sauvignon.
For sure.
Or Syrah, or any French grapes. And there was an accusation that some producers had been doing this. I think ultimately, in the end, no one was found to be guilty of doing this, from my understanding. But I was wondering if there are any repercussions, if that scandal is still felt. Do you still talk about it? Have you guys changed the way that maybe people analyze vineyards or analyze wines? How is that still felt today?
Now, you know, when if you look about the numbers, that everything Montalcino had some problems in 2009, but very strong link to the international crisis, not very strong link what happened with the wine. For sure was not a beautiful image that Montalcino gave to the world, to not respect the law of production. And we, like Canalicchio di Sopra, we are, very focused on Sangiovese. We only have Sangiovese grapes.
And you guys don't even make an IGT wine or a white wine. You only grow Sangiovese.
Brunello and Rosso di Montalcino. And so my grandfather was one of the people that wrote the first law of production in 1966, when the first DOC was made for Brunello di Montalcino. So we are very against to use other grapes. But something happened in 2008. Everybody knows. The point is that a name like Brunello is a big name, so everybody wanna speak about Brunello di Montalcino. And when there is something wrong, for sure it's good for journalists, for everybody to speak about that, because it gives audience, no? So the problem, the real problem, was smaller than than what seems at the beginning, but the problem was there. So it has very really good chance to have the strong consortium that has been able to maintain all together, to restart from a different way. And I think that from this period also some wine changes. We are going back to have more classicity, to have more terroir attention in the wines. And I think that's the problem was also a bit influenced by what the market was asking in the 90s, which is completely different from today. And like Canalicchio di Sopra, we feel that we are having great success for now because something's changing the mind and the palate of the people. They want to drink a wine because they want to drink, not just because they want to taste a glass for super body wine. And we are happy about this changement and this to be back on the traditional classic style wines in general. And not big effect in terms of numbers, because the value of Brunello di Montalcino now is 3 times, which was in 2009. So we have to think that there is a market for sure, like everywhere, of wine, not bottled wine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like that everything that happened back in 2008 really has affected the image in at least what I see in New York of Montalcino. But for sure, when it came out, there was so much press frenzy about it. Yeah. It was like this huge, huge thing, the Brunello scandal.
No, this is something will be always present, no? Also in this interview, always when I speak with people, always remember it will be for the next 20 years. So it's something that was better to not have in the history of Brunello di Montalcino, but it's something that happened. It's also maybe good that happened in front of everybody, so we had a chance to be clear and to restart. But really, the at the end of everything, it was only speaking about something like 500,000 bottles in now, production, which is 9 million for a year.
Now, some people have been talking about allowing the international grapes into Rosso di Montalcino. Is there any movement on this? Is this actually a possibility of something that might happen, or is this just people talking?
That was 2 years ago. We get a votation on the consortium to make two different classification of Rosso di Montalcino, a selection of Rosso di Montalcino only made with Sangiovese grapes, mainly from the classification of Brunello di Montalcino for the producer like us, that we may only make Rosso di Montalcino reclassificate Brunello grapes, and making a regular Rosso di Montalcino open 15% to be added to the international grapes. This has been avoided 2 years ago with a votation which was 75% against this option, and so there is no more possibility for that. We are going to continue we believe in that because we are doing that. We are going to continue to make also Rosso di Montalcino 100% with Sangiovese grapes.
Okay. All right. We're going to finish up on some more fun questions, not about necessarily about Canalicchio di Sopra Brunello, even though it is something that I love and you know very well. When you are not drinking Brunello di Montalcino, what other wines are you drinking?
I am a big fan of Piedmont wines. I really like the bees of Italy, so Brunello, Barbaresco, and Barolo, because I really found a similarity in the terroir style and with the connection for sure. My first wines are Italian wines, are very nationalist in the wine drinking, but I have really to say that there is no year where I cannot drink at least a bottle of good Burgundy or a great bottle of champagne for sure. Even if also in Italy there we are having great sparkling wines. Franciacorta is growing a lot, is making great wines. So usually I'm a consumer of Franciacorta and Trento DOC, like sparkling wine, and I'm a very, very big fan for the elegance, also because I have a great friends in Piedmont, but they're doing very great wines with Piedmont wines, especially Barbaresco and Barolo.
Do you drink any Amaro or Grappa? Do you have a favorite Amaro or Grappa?
I'm not really a big fan of Grappa, even if our estate we make a small production of Grappa, very simple white Grappa from the skins of the old vines. But in this side, I'm not really Italian in terms that I really like some Scotch whiskey and rum, especially rum.
Would you rather drive a Ferrari or Lamborghini?
I will never have this kind of car. I like very much, but I think is this is not for a wine make for a Brunello producer. This is not for for a farmer like our family is. This is a car maybe for investors in wine industry, but not for us. But they are great cars for sure.
Hard to drive down the dirt road. I thought if you were going to choose one, maybe you might choose a Lamborghini because he was a farmer before he got.
You're right.
Before I got into the...
But also the Ferrari family. They sound like a very simple family with a great great mission in the mind. And so that's two beautiful things about it made in Italy together with the one. We have something very beautiful and something that a lot of visitors around the world want to come and see. So that's... We are really... with all the problems we have, especially political problems and economics problems, but we are really... I think we are really lucky to live in a very fantastic place like Italy is.
And last question is, how's Italy going to do in the World Cup?
I don't know. This year is very challenging because it maybe is not the year when Italy has the best team, but it has a big problem in 82. It has a big problem in 2006, so not great expectation because of the problem, internal problem with the soccer in 2006. So maybe it can be the right year, but I'm not very confident to arrive at the end. We will see.
Was this so 2006 a good Montalcino year? 82 pretty good Montalcino year.
Yeah, and maybe 2014 started in a good way. So we'll see. It's too early to see what's happened. But we really have a great impression. I want to say it's possible about 2013. We really have the chance to show something different in a great way, something we were not useful to have in the last 10, 15 years. A very traditional, very old-style vintage with great acidity, beautiful perfume. So really like to release 2013 Rosso in next December, which will be great.
Great. All right, Francesco Ripacciolo. You can see 27 years old, the kind of maturity that you've as long as I've known you since you were 20, you've had the same kind of level-headedness and maturity and intelligence and obviously passion for what you're doing. It makes sense to me that you're one of the vice presidents of the consortio, and the legacy of the estate that your grandfather started is in really good hands, and I can't wait to see what's happening in the future. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Joe. It was a very nice talking with you.
And come to any of our restaurants, and you can feel free to pop up one of Francesco's wines. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.